Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
AJ Hinch is back in the major leagues. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and well, we have a lot to get into today. A lot of football talk. Last night, right here on KOAL, Atlanta Falcons topping the Carolina Panthers. I know that's it's hard for Falcon fans to believe, but Atlanta did not blow a fourth quarter advantage. Julio Jones was great last night, 137 yards receiving. Matt Ryan throws for 281. Todd Gurley finds the end zone again, and the Falcons get their second victory of the season. We will talk NFL from a fantasy perspective. That's coming up in a bit here on Drive Time Sports. I don't know that the matchups are eye-popping, but there are a lot of intriguing fantasy questions, and we'll get into that in just a bit. Also on the show today, I want to talk college football. Week away from the Pac-12 picking back up. We have start times. That makes you Pac-12 fans feel better. And BYU will be back in action tomorrow. They'll take on Western Kentucky. Zach Wilson continues to make a case for the Heisman. I don't think he wins the Heisman, but I'd like to see Zach Wilson get there. I want to see him at the ceremony. So we'll talk BYU. We'll talk college football as well. In fact, speaking of the Heisman, how about Trevor Lawrence, front runner? He's going to face a new kind of challenge. He's got a quarantine for at least 10 days after testing positive for COVID-19. We're talking about the projected number one pick in the NFL draft. He will not play tomorrow. Clemson takes on Boston College. Should be easy pickings for Clemson. Even without Lawrence, I believe they were 29-point favorites. He tested positive for COVID. Game came off of the board. It reappears. And the Tigers are now 24-point favorites. It's not going to matter. Here's where things get interesting. Next Saturday, Clemson takes on Notre Dame. I assure you, I promise you, Trevor Lawrence is going to be playing. If I'm wrong, I will sit here, not this upcoming Monday, but the Monday after, and I will apologize. Because I full-heartedly believe that the ACC and Clemson will do everything in its power to get Trevor Lawrence back on the field for that primetime contest. It's just too important. And if you go back and you look at the way the COVID situation was handled with Nick Saban, it's completely different than any other coach. It is. All things are not equal, including college football. Now, the rule placed in the ACC is that any player that tests positive has to quarantine for 10 days. The news broke yesterday that Trevor Lawrence had tested positive. However, Clemson is saying that he tested positive on Wednesday, which means he would be back in time for next Saturday's showdown, and which could be number one versus number four. In fact, it most certainly will be number one versus number four, Notre Dame and Clemson. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll talk more college football in just a bit on the show today as well. And again, we'll talk Cougar football because BYU tomorrow night, Western Kentucky. We'll get to that in just a bit. I started the show by talking about A.J. Hinch. Yes, the disgraced World Series championship manager A.J. Hinch is back. He is officially the manager of the Detroit Tigers. His suspension ended on Tuesday night as the Dodgers topped the Rays in the World Series. And I could sit here and complain about the way baseball handled the whole cheating scandal with the Astros, be it Rob Manfred calling the trophy a piece of metal, be it a slap on the wrist for the Astros organization, A.J. Hinch getting a one-year suspension, Jeff Luhnow, the general manager losing his gig. I mean, whatever. The $5 million, it doesn't matter anymore. It's over and done with. A.J. Hinch is back in the game of baseball, And he had to know today that one of the first questions he would be asked was about the cheating scandal. I thought Hinch, who obviously was well prepared for the question, he answered it fairly well. Here he is today talking about the new era of Detroit Tiger baseball.
It's been a large topic in my life as I've reflected back and learned and grown and to grow and ultimately decompress from from something that was very wrong. And, you know, as I told Mr. Ilitch and Al both, you know, that's part of my story. It's not the Tiger story. And I understand the question, and I understand how wrong it was, and I'm sorry for that. I've said that before. I'll say it again. I'll continue to say it. I'll never forget the feeling that I've had throughout the past year as I've navigated this with my family.
Again, that's A.J. Hinch talking about the cheating scandal in Houston and what that means moving forward to Detroit. Look, the fact is Major League Baseball is going to allow A.J. Hinch back into a dugout. And if you're looking for a manager, there's not a better manager available. And I know on social media, people were upset about the Tigers. Don't be upset about this whole situation. Don't be mad about the Tigers. Or don't be mad at the Tigers. Be mad at Manfred in Major League Baseball. Tigers are doing nothing wrong. Now, this was not the only high-profile manager signing. The Chicago White Sox pulled off somewhat of a head-scratcher yesterday when they announced the hiring of Hall of Famer Tony La Russa. La Russa is going to return to the Chicago White Sox. Is this the right hire? I had so many people text me and ask me, what do you think of the La Russa hire? I'll talk about this a little bit later on in the show. I'll be real. I don't hate it. I don't hate it, and I'll tell you why right now. People keep pointing to La Russa's age. I don't care that he's 76 years old. And why should we? Now, there may be questions regarding him being able to relate to the players in today's realm because he's a staunch believer of the unwritten rules in baseball. Staunch believer of it. He doesn't like the idea of letting the kids have fun, letting the kids play. That's not La Russa's style. But many people are just pointing to his age and saying he's 76 years old. Look, I've been campaigning for Dusty Baker to get Manager of the Year votes. He's 71, and he found a way to rally the Houston Astros following one of the most controversial offseasons in league history. So, look, I'm willing to hear out the White Sox plan, why it was Tony La Russa. And ultimately, I don't hate this hire immediately. I'm not saying it's going to work. And again, we'll dissect this in the world of analytics a little bit later on in the show. I don't hate the hire. I don't love it. I'm curious. Let's put it that way. I'm curious. And those are really the two big stories today in the national sports front. Wednesday, we had the story of the Utah Jazz being sold to Ryan Smith, ending a plus three-decade-year run for the Utah Jazz under the Miller family. It's kind of sad to say goodbye to the Millers, right? Larry Miller did so much for the Jazz franchise. But the thing that's so interesting to me about this is the Jazz were sold to a fan in Ryan Smith. So we have plenty to get into on the show, plenty to talk about. We're going to continue in just a moment right here on Drive Time Sports. Again, a lot of football talk. We'll talk college, we'll talk fantasy, and we'll talk Utah Jazz. It's all straight ahead on this edition of Drive Time Sports.
I go into every game plan expecting it to work, to be quite honest with you.
Touchdown, Alabama. Devontae Smith coming from left to right, made the catch, and was gone.
I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is #IDon'tCare.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
You know it ain't my time to call it a day, but it's about time you remember the name, hey, hey. You know it ain't my time.
Approaching Halloween weekend, a lot of football going on. If it's the NFL, which new week kicked off last night right here on KOAL, or if it's college football, which the Pac-12, it's right around the corner. We're gearing up for it. We got kickoff times for week one. And we have some unfortunate news surrounding the Clemson Tigers. A lot going on in the college football realm. We're going to talk about that right now with Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports, who is joining us right now. And Antoine, I look forward to these college football segments every week. Thank you again for the time.
It's good to be with you again.
I always look forward to it. Let's start by talking about Clemson. The news that broke yesterday, Trevor Lawrence, front runner for the Heisman Trophy, has not missed a game in three seasons at Clemson. And now, well, that streak's coming to an end because he will miss tomorrow's game against Boston College. The game's been taken off of the board. Was taken off the board for a while. Now it's been reposted. Clemson, a 24-point favorite. Nonetheless, it is unfortunate. Trevor Lawrence's status is up in the air for next week's primetime game against Notre Dame. I don't know that this really alters anything with Clemson, but it is concerning and it is unfortunate, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have the best player, at least the best quarterback in college football, and he gets diagnosed with COVID-19, especially the year it's been going, yeah, it's definitely a huge deal. So, yeah, they have Boston College this week. Boston College is a solid team, but you would imagine Clemson has enough to it. It shouldn't be any problems, especially playing at home. But, yeah, the big question is, can he play against Notre Dame? And if he doesn't play, what does that mean for Clemson down the line? I still feel like, even if he doesn't play against Clemson, I mean, against Notre Dame, then I think Clemson, assuming that they were to win the ACC and if they were to lose the Notre Dame, they would still be in a position where they would find themselves in the playoff no matter what. But, yeah, it's definitely it's a lot of questions to be asked, and it's going to be interesting to see if he doesn't end up playing at South Bend in 8 days.
Look, I'm going to be real. He will play at Notre Dame next Saturday. He will play, and this is where I kind of have an issue with college football, and it kind of goes back to what happened with Nick Saban at Alabama just a couple of weeks ago. If you believe that all things are equal across the board, boy, you're naive, because it's absolutely not. And I'm telling you right now that if Trevor Lawrence was Chase Bryce, right, who's at Duke, if he was Chase Bryce, he would already be ruled out for next Saturday's game against Notre Dame. But it's not the way it works in college football. I would be willing to bet a large sum of money that regardless, they will find a way to get that guy on the field next Saturday against Notre Dame. I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah, I pretty much feel the same way, just because it's such a big game, a high-profile game. This is definitely one of the games that everybody circled once the schedule came out. And, yeah, it would take something monumental, I think, to keep him off the field. I think they're going to try to find every way possible to get him out there on the field. I would be very surprised. But, you know, you never know. It could be up to the doctors. It could be outside of Dabo Sweeney's control as well. So it's going to be interesting week next week leading up to that game.
Well, let's talk about some of the other big games that we have coming up this Saturday, tomorrow. For instance, Ohio State, number 3 now in the country. They'll take on Penn State. Penn State looking to battle back after really putting forth a tremendous second half effort last week against Indiana, but it was ultimately the first half that did them in. Now they're number 18 in the country. They get Ohio State. It's not the marquee matchup ranking-wise that we expected. You know, we thought this would be against two teams inside the top 10, but I almost view week one of college football for any school, their first game, there's an element of the unknowns, similar to what we had in the NFL based off of the crazy timeline. You know, you look at the Big Ten. To me, it wasn't a huge shock that we saw a massive upset, and that's what we got in the Indiana-Penn State game. Antoine, I believe that Penn State's going to be much better tomorrow against Ohio State. I don't think they win the game, but I do believe they will be much better through four quarters.
Well, yeah. I mean, Indiana's always been a pesky team. It's just a matter of, have they been able to pull off that big-time upset, whether it be they played Ohio State tough a few years ago, Michigan. Yeah, they were fine to get over the hump and beat an Indiana team. Obviously, James Franklin made some questionable decisions there, but that's a whole other discussion. But, yeah, I expect a much better effort, especially them playing at home in front of some people in the stands. They're a big game against Ohio State, which is really a must-win for them. If they have any aspirations of winning the Big Ten this year, they really have to win that game. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really close game. I know a lot of people are just willing to say Ohio State's going to easily win it, but it wouldn't surprise me if Penn State would put up a good fight. I do expect the Buckeyes to pull out the victory there. I just think their talent is across the board a little bit more than what Penn State has, at least right now, early on in the season.
And as far as Justin Fields is concerned, you put together another performance like he did last week, which is not sustainable. I mean, come on. The guy was nearly perfect. It was a video game last week. But my goodness, we saw what this kid is capable of. And if you thought that there was going to be any rust surrounding Justin Fields, you were sorely mistaken. This kid looked tremendous. He looked every bit as good as a top 3, top 4 quarterback prospect that many have him pegged as.
Yeah, I mean, he played Nebraska. I think you couldn't ask for a better performance there than what he ended up having last week for the Buckeyes there. And one incompletion, two touchdowns, had a rushing touchdown. I mean, yeah, it was literally something you can pull out of the video game and end up scoring over 50 points. I don't imagine it's going to be the exact same way against a more talented Penn State team. But, I mean, Fields is definitely, along with Trevor Lawrence there, the two best quarterbacks in the country. And I think he'll probably showcase that again, once again, on primetime tomorrow night.
And we have a couple of other matchups tomorrow, Antoine, that don't necessarily stand out as far as the rankings, but still, it's college football at its best. For instance, in the SEC, we get LSU at Auburn. These teams have played every year since 92, and it's the first time since 99 that they are meeting with neither team ranked. Think about that. It's been over 20 years since these two schools have played, and neither one was ranked at that time. And in my mind, that makes this matchup even that much more interesting tomorrow.
Yeah, you got Auburn. I know they came out to win against Ole Miss there, but ended up losing. They lost to Georgia earlier in this year, ended up losing to South Carolina a couple of weeks ago there. So they're still trying to find their way and trying to win before they get their schedule gets really, really tough at the end of the year, playing Alabama and Texas A&M back-to-back. And you got LSU. They ended up picking up a big win against South Carolina there last week, but a couple of weeks ago before that, and I'm losing kind of a heartbreaker, a really weird game against Missouri. We ended up having to move that to Columbia, where you got a young quarterback there. I mean, yeah, you're definitely going to have your bumps in the road there, especially with all the transition LSU has had there. I expect Auburn to win, but in this rivalry, it always seems like it's some kind of weird play, a close matchup, and I don't expect tomorrow to be any different.
When you look at some of the other games that we have going on, I mean, we'll talk about the ACC here in just a moment. I also want to get into BYU, but is there anything in the SEC, maybe Texas A&M, Arkansas, does that stand out to you at all?
Yeah, I think Arkansas has really had been a surprise. I know they're 2-2, but their defense has been really, really stout, and they're a much better team, and I think their record can give some credit for. So, I mean, I know A&M 3-1 there, but if they're not careful, then Arkansas is definitely a team that you have to watch out for. And Florida's playing tomorrow for the first time since October 10th there. They've ended up having the COVID situation. Dan Mullen had got doubts, diagnosed with the coronavirus. It's going to be interesting to see how they react since they not played, since they ended up losing to Texas A&M nearly 3 weeks ago. And last time we did see them, their defense ended up giving up 41 points. So I'm curious to see how they perform playing against a Missouri team and really a tune-up before their game against Georgia. So those would be the games that I would look at. And also Georgia and Kentucky tomorrow as well.
Again, Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports, our guest as we talk college football. A couple of other big games outside of the SEC. We'll talk Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. We've talked about Clemson, and even without Trevor Lawrence, I would expect Clemson to get the job done. Notre Dame should have a route as well against Georgia Tech, but it's not as if we've seen the Irish play on the road an awful lot this season. I mean, for as long as the college football season's going on, we can't forget there was that gap because Notre Dame did have a couple of weeks off. It looks as if they're gaining their footing, Antoine. I wasn't overly impressed with a couple of performances the Irish had put together, but last week against Pitt, it looked like they found that rhythm that we expected going into the season. I think this is a telling game. I think Notre Dame handles Georgia Tech, but I think they need to handle Georgia Tech in a similar way as to how they handle Pitt. In my mind, it needs to be a 52-6, 52-7 type game. I don't believe you can give any mental edge to Clemson knowing that you get them at home next week, so I'm looking for style points from Notre Dame tomorrow.
Notre Dame was exactly what you're supposed to do, especially with a Pitt team that was missing their starting quarterback, Kenny Pickett, there as well, especially after a subpar performance against Louisville the prior week. So, yeah, you definitely have to treat this as a tune-up, especially going on the road there. And you know you got Clemson next weekend. Whether Trevor Lawrence plays or not, you know they have a ton of talent on that team. So, yeah, you can't be in a letdown. So you definitely have to show that, yeah, we came to play, and we can definitely win this game by a whole lot. Especially, I don't expect them to win it by 73-7 like Clemson did a few weeks ago. But, yeah, just make some kind of statement that shows that, yeah, we can beat possibly in this, end up beating Clemson next week. So I expect them to do that.
Let's talk about BYU, number 11. They'll take on Western Kentucky at home tomorrow night, late kickoff, 8:15 p.m. BYU is a team that continues to gain traction. Zach Wilson's a kid that has definitely, in my mind, done enough, regardless of who he's playing. I mean, you just look, the eye test has to account for something. In my mind, he's done enough to at least earn a conversation to get to the Heisman ceremony, much less be a top four or five prospect from a quarterback standpoint in the draft. And look, if you're not into BYU, I think the idea of them having a legitimate NFL prospect at quarterback is enough to tune in and watch a game like this against Western Kentucky tomorrow night. And again, I can't stress this enough. Throw the opponent out the board. Just watch the eye test. Watch this kid. Watch his footwork. Watch the tight throws that he makes. Watch his field vision, because Antoine, he's been very good this year.
Yeah, he has only thrown one interception, 16 touchdowns. Really been the catalyst for that whole offense there, too, as well. They've been running the ball well as well, also. I'm curious to see how BYU plays, especially knowing that they have Boise State a week from today at Boise. So, obviously, that's going to be a huge game for both of those teams there. More so BYU is trying to show they are a team that can compete for not only maybe a college football playoff. I don't expect them to get there, but one of the big-time bowl games at the end of the year. So, but yeah, that's definitely going to be a statement game there. You definitely want to make sure you take care of business of Western Kentucky first. But yeah, I think Wilson has been as good as advertised and one of the better quarterbacks in the country.
Is there anything we haven't touched on college football-wise? Anything that's standing out? Anything that's caught your eye up to this point?
Well, you look at some of the other games too as well. I like Kansas State. I definitely think they're a really good story this upcoming. I know they're 4-1, but they travel to West Virginia tomorrow, take on the Mountaineers. So that's a game I'm definitely keeping my eye on as well. And I know Michigan ended up beating Minnesota last week. I'm curious to see how they continue to play. They should take care of the Spartans tomorrow, but they end up having the game against Indiana and Wisconsin, and of course they get Penn State and Ohio State down the line. But we know Jim Harbaugh is taking a lot of criticism as of late there. How can they continue to grow and can they continue to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten this upcoming year? That's some of the story I'm watching for.
Antoine, it is always a pleasure to get you on. Of course, you do a lot of work, be it the NFL or college football. So, again, let us know where we can find more of your work.
The best place to find me is on Twitter at Antoine Staley. There you get access to all of my work there. So, yeah, just find me on Twitter at Antoine Staley.
Looking forward to talking again next week, Antoine. Enjoy the weekend of college football. And as always, it is a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We come back, we're going to talk more football. Last night, we had Thursday night action right here as the Falcons took down the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk fantasy football. We can't talk Falcons-Panthers, but we can preview every other matchup, talk about some of the best plays. That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up on the front by Hopkins into the end zone.
We talk fantasy football on Thursday. There's some things around. Of course, I was out of the studio yesterday, so now we're going to talk fantasy on Friday as we gear up for the weekend games. And joining us, as he does each week, to break down the fantasy football matchups, we have Joe Bartle of RotoWire.com. RotoWire, of course, that's the best place to go as far as fantasy sports is concerned. Joe, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on talking to fantasy sports.
Yeah, no question. It is a fun time of the year as well now that we are going into week 8. Hopefully, fantasy teams out there, you kind of know what you have, what you don't have at this point in time. Last night, we had two teams that are really intriguing fantasy squads. I mean, be it the Carolina Panthers, we thought maybe we'd see Christian McCaffrey return this week. That obviously didn't happen. So, at least one more full week of Mike Davis in the backfield. The Atlanta Falcons, Todd Gurley hasn't done a lot but score touchdowns. That's what he does. And then Julio Jones looked semi-healthy last night as well. I thought these are two really interesting teams from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, I mean, really, and if I'm kind of disappointed the weather was what it was last night, because I think that would have been a pretty fun game to watch if the conditions weren't so sloppy out there, and especially if Calvin Ridley was healthy too, that would have made a difference. But it's going to be really interesting for the future as well. What Calvin Ridley's stats is going to be is going to matter a lot to the Falcons' offense. I imagine Christian McCaffrey will be back next week. So, what does that mean for Mike Davis? And we've seen Mike Davis do really well right now as the guy for the Panthers, and I have a hard time believing they can just take him away from that point forward. So is this going to be like a Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb situation? Are we going to just have CMC go back to being the guy in the future and then have Mike Davis maybe factor in a little bit more at different, more opportune times? I'm not sure. And I'll be really interested to see. There's a lot that the Panthers could do with this offense, whether they put Christian McCaffrey more as a slot receiver or move DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson around. They've already been utilizing Curtis Samuel in a way I think they would have loved to have Christian McCaffrey do. So does CMC also cut into Samuel's work? He had 2 touchdowns last night. There's a lot of complicating question marks that we're not going to have really, I think, until probably week 10 or 11, and that might be already too late for a lot of teams who are hanging on right now or trying to plan ahead for the future, because we need to see what Christian McCaffrey does first, what that does in the Panthers' offense, and then how that impacts everything else moving forward. And Calvin Ridley's injury could be a question mark for the Falcons as well.
Yeah, and as far as McCaffrey is concerned and Mike Davis, and Joe, I could be completely wrong here, but the way Matt Rhule actually approaches the game of football, it's kind of unorthodox, and I think that's what the Panthers wanted when they went with Matt Rhule. We've seen this guy build up programs in the college game, and he did it by being unorthodox. When I look at what the Panthers have coming out of the backfield, I could see Mike Davis being a third down back and Christian McCaffrey moving to the slot on third downs. I think that's a realistic option, a realistic possibility moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually kind of think of the Matt LaFleur offense a little bit with the Packers. We've seen Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, they've both been healthy, on the field at the same time. And it's been a really effective offense involving Tyler Urban in some capacity, kind of as a running back, wide receiver, too. We've seen that work with both Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones on the field, like all three of those guys. And the difference with the Packers is they just don't have the weapons from a wide receiver position to really make defenses concerned. I think the Panthers are different. They almost have too many guys now with Curtis Samuel kind of emerging as the key piece. And whether or not Bridgewater can really maintain that sort of capacity with all those different weapons is going to be the key part of it. But I think Christian McCaffrey still is involved and is maybe not the number one fantasy running back, because we've seen so many guys kind of emerge, especially Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook looks like he's ready to go. A few of those guys are like, oh yeah, okay, Alvin Kamara is a perfect example too, that more or less have to cement CMC because of what they've done so far. But McCaffrey is going to be a factor. It just is going to be a matter of what type of factor for that Panthers offense moving forward. And I think he is going to be a very firm fantasy factor on top of that, too.
Yeah, look, this is the way I'll view it for anyone that has Christian McCaffrey on the roster. You're going to acquire a top-5 fantasy back next week, hopefully next week, for nothing. Right, I mean, you just get him back. At this point in time, you've gone without Christian McCaffrey, and if you've been able to weather that storm, you're going to get a top-5 fantasy running back close to any trade deadline for nothing fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I mean, other than sitting on him for 8 weeks. I mean, right. A roster spot is a big deal at this point,
yeah.
Especially in COVID season, right, and all the bye weeks and everything else moving around. It has been, I feel like you've had to pay the price to be able to keep a top-5 fantasy running back. But this is going to be the payoff, and whether it's the number one overall fantasy running back payoff or a top-5, top-10 guy, you're going to get something out of it, and I think that matters given the roster constraints that you're put through throughout most of the season.
Now let's continue to talk about running backs as we move ahead. There are fringe RB2 flex-type running backs, one of them being Myles Gaskin, who you and I have talked about quite a bit here on the show. He's got a full workload. I'm not huge on Gaskin this week because they have to go up against the Ram defense, although it's not out of the question that Tua uses him a tad bit more because it's the first start for the rookie, so maybe they rely on the run game a tad bit more. But then you look at a guy like David Montgomery, you look at a guy like Devin Singletary, who a lot of people were high on going into the year, and he just does not performed very well. And last week you and I talked about another guy that was available on the waiver wire in many leagues. I don't believe he is anymore, and a guy like Boston Scott. So when I mentioned the names Myles Gaskin, I mentioned the name, you know, Montgomery or Singletary, at this point in time, Joe, 8 weeks into the season, those guys just have not performed. Gaskin has, but I mean Montgomery and a Singletary, these are RB2 guys that just have not clicked.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I even think higher up, like the Melvin Gordons of the world, who are being drafted in that same range of David Montgomery. We don't know what legal problems that might be coming up. We had the DUI a couple weeks ago with Gordon and haven't really heard anything since in that regard. But he's been splitting time with Philip Lindsay. David Johnson, to me, more so than even Devin Singletary, has been a guy that just has underperformed thus far. He gets a few touchdowns, which is great, and he's on the field the whole time, which is basically what you were looking for in that fourth round running backs. Other than Mark Ingram, you've more or less got what you've drafted at that point. Myles Gaskin, was a under radar free agent option after week one, and has quietly emerged to a top starting running back. To Devin Singletary, though, I actually think Singletary has looked really good when the Bills have made him the number one guy. For whatever the reason, they've decided to devote snaps and opportunities to Zach Moss, and I think that's been an ineffective choice for that offense. And when Singletary is the back, which we saw a couple weeks when Moss was out, he was really effective, totaling over 100 total yards, I think, in either two or three straight weeks. And he just hasn't been able to score, but that's fine because Josh Allen was so effective in the red zone scoring touchdowns. So I think Singletary is fine so long as Moss is out. Unfortunately, Moss is back and healthy. It looks like it's a 50-50 split, and we're in trouble there. It is interesting, all those guys that you mentioned, and yet Jamal Williams, a Giovanni Bernard, perhaps even a DJ Dallas or whoever ends up starting for the Seahawks this week, and Boston Scott, too, are all way more viable starters than even a Clyde Edwards-Helaire or a Jonathan Taylor, perhaps, or Melvin Gordon or Dale Henderson or Jerick McKinnon. Like, guys that we are more or less, McKinnon doesn't fit in that category, but guys we are more or less anticipating in that fourth, fifth, sixth round draft in August to be your capable RB2s have fallen completely to the wayside with all these injured guys that have now yielded starting opportunities to these players. And I think Giovanni Bernard, again, could be a top 12 option. I think Boston Scott is almost guaranteed to be a top 12 option so long as Sanders is out. And Jamal Williams, too, against the Vikings defense, I think, is also a pretty capable guy. And all of these players were picked up in the last two or three weeks, and all are going to be quality starters compared to some of those names that you mentioned.
Again, Joe Bartle of rotowire.com, our guest right now as we talk fantasy football. And Joe, I had this conversation with someone just a couple of days ago as far as the running back position in the NFL. And when you and I were talking in the offseason, we kind of used the analogy of the stock market. There's a lot of interesting revelations as far as the running back position is concerned. I mean, you mentioned a standout rookie in Kansas City, and now the Chiefs bring in Le'Veon Bell. You take a look around the league, and you're seeing more of the two-headed, three-headed monster. I mean, a running back by committee approach, and the NFL is a copycat league. Have we reached that point? Have we reached that time in the game where we're no longer going to value running backs the way we do right now in fantasy football based off of the workload and the opportunity that may be spread around? Because it really seems like that's the route that the NFL is moving. I mean, talking about two or three different guys, a running back by committee approach.
Yeah, actually, I think we're going to value the running back position more as a result of that. We actually really saw it already this past August. I know a lot of people were really trying to focus on the running back position. So you were seeing at minimum six or seven guys go in the first round. And I was in drafts, particularly expert drafts, where the first 10 or 11 picks were running backs overall, because there just isn't that many defined, obvious starting options out there. And of course, the injuries have kind of made that a problem for the first round overall, but certainly at running backs. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley missed time. We had Dalvin Cook already miss a week. Michael Thomas has been a frustrating endeavor. Kenyon Drake, maybe a late first-round pick, also injured. Austin Eckler, also a late first-round guy, injured. Joe Mixon set to miss, I think, his second week now in a row. I mean, that's six or seven guys that were going to the first 14 picks overall that have been injured. So it's a frustrating thing, but that's why you were drafting those players, because you don't want to deal with the Darrell Henderson, Malcolm Brown, the Damian Harris, Sonny Michel, like those types of situations, even to some extent, the Browns with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. Chubb was, I thought, the better running back overall, and then he gets hurt. Kareem Hunt has not been the defined number one starter. And like in the case of Edwards-Helaire, like, great, we thought we had that same guy in one of the most potent offenses we've ever seen in the NFL, and then they go ahead and sign Le'Veon Bell. So I don't know if it's more of a copycat league or just good teams making sure they get good talent. Like, that's the same reason Antonio Brown signed with the Buccaneers. But when it comes to the fantasy running back position, I think those very guaranteed guaranteed top options are going to be valued even more. And I think that makes the priority position for the first round to make sure you get a Zeke, a Kamara, a Barkley, a Christian McCaffrey in those top four is going to matter so much more in the coming years as we try to figure out who can slip into that spot when so many teams are really pivoting to this running back by committee.
Joe, before I let you go, I want to jump over to the wide receiver position because, again, there's been a lot of injuries here as well. If you talk about those surefire 1, 2, 3, 4 guys, I mean, we've talked about Devontae Adams. I know you're a Packer guy, so you've seen Devontae come back with vengeance last week. But still, you had to work with a spot on your bench in a very deep position being held for Devontae Adams. Same may be said for Julio Jones. So when you look at the wide receiver spot, regardless of the injuries, is there anyone in your mind that may be available in most leagues that players should definitely take a look at?
Like a player that was available in most leagues they should pick up, or ones that I think could emerge in the second half of the season?
Both. Either or.
Okay. Well, I was all in on Devonta Adams as the number one fantasy wide receiver, even after week four or five. Really, once we knew he was coming back from a hamstring injury after 2 weeks, I was on board with that. And we didn't really see it his first game back with the Buccaneers and how great that Buccaneers defense was. But we did see it against the Texans, and I think we're going to see it again against this Viking secondary. You just look at the Packers' strength of schedule the rest of the way, and they have some tougher matchups. The Niners stick out quite a bit as a Packers fan myself. It's like, oh boy, that's not going to be good. But I think Devontae Adams has to be one of the top guys, if not the top guy, because of how much the Packers' offense has to revolve around him. I think DK Metcalf also is going to be a top two, top three fantasy wide receiver the rest of the season, given how the Seahawks' offense has to operate. Now, they have a much harder division in the NFC West than anyone else out there. So maybe there will be times, like we saw this past Sunday night, where he just gets clamped down by a Patrick Peterson or a Jalen Ramsey. But for the most part, I think DK Metcalf is going to have the speed, size, and fit in the offense to be a very capable option moving forward. And I really love Justin Jefferson, too, as a wide receiver one. And I imagine most people either picked him up on free agency or drafting him later on as your wide receiver four or five or six. But I'm very comfortable paying up the price to go ahead and get Justin Jefferson acting as if he's a number one. It might be Devontae Adams, DK Metcalf, Tyreek Hill, Thielen, Lockett, Ridley. I'm just rattling off names off the top of my head that I'd rather have over Jefferson. But the list is smaller and smaller each and every week right now, and I'm really happy to see him kind of emerge as a very capable wide receiver one right now. So those are some guys that I'm totally fine with the rest of the season. And Marquise Brown, I look at the Ravens' offense, their strength of schedule the rest of the year when it comes to wide receivers is fantastic, and I think he's a great buy-low candidate right now. But in terms of guys that might be on the waiver wire, it's pretty tough. I was fine with Rashad Higgins right now. Travis Fulgham in past weeks, I can't imagine he's available at any point now. But Fulgham, especially when we thought maybe DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffery could come back, that was maybe a bit of a, like, oh, yeah, we can get him on a buy low, who I think will be a capable wide receiver two or three for your team the rest of the season. And maybe even sticking in Philadelphia, Jalen Reagor, who might be available if you don't have an injured reserve slot on your leagues right now. I really like him to quietly emerge as not like an Odell Beckham type when he had his injury and came back in his rookie year, but I think he could do some really capable things, especially if the Eagles are contending for a playoff spot like I imagine they will in the NFC least, not East, but least division.
Yeah. Again, Joe Bartle of RotoWire joining us to talk fantasy football. Joe, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
Yeah, you can follow me at JB Fantasy Sports. I try to take as many Twitter questions as I can throughout the week. We do the Tuesday RotoWire podcast. Every Tuesday we break down all the free agent pickups that are available. And also you can get a free trial to the site on RotoWire by just going to RotoWire.com/free or RotoWire.com/radio. That gets you 10 days free on the site itself. You can look at all the new tools and different things that we have for sports betting, for DFS, your weekly rankings, daily lineups, weather things. We actually just added a tool that I'm just in love with right now, and I tweeted about it the other day. That actually takes into account strength of schedule for positions, whether it be quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Gives you some infographics, some other tools that can help you decide based on other teams and opponents. But it really is like dictating how I am going out and acquiring players right now in the middle portion of the season. Guys like Jonathan Taylor, Joe Mixon, I'm aggressively trading for because I'm basing it off of the strength of schedule tool, which is available on the site. So rotowire.com/free, rotowire.com/radio. That gets that 10-day free trial to the site. And it's not just football, basketball, baseball, hockey. We got you all covered, every sport imaginable.
Joe, it is always a pleasure to get you on. I definitely appreciate the time, and I look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Always. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Some big news on Wednesday. It wasn't just the World Series. We also found out that the Utah Jazz have a new majority owner. This shocked me, Travis.
Didn't see this one coming, did we?
No, I didn't see it coming. Did you?
No, it was pretty quiet, and then all of a sudden, the news pops up, and they're sold. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, a lot of people knew, just, you know, that inside circle of people with the Millers and Ryan Smith.
So here's the deal, Jazz fans. I think it's a good thing for Utah. I really do. For the Jazz organization, I think it's a really good thing. Because one of the things in my mind that the Jazz organization has missed since the passing of Larry H. Miller is the enthusiasm within the organization. And I think it starts at the top. And ultimately, when you look at Ryan Smith, the new owner, he's a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. In fact, I think this is exactly what the Utah Jazz need. He's an advocate for business. He's said to be upbeat, relentless. As far as the idea of him building a winner, we'll see. We'll see. I believe a fan as your owner is always a great thing. And I don't want to compare it to Mark Cuban, but that's the first thing that popped into my head. Because Mark Cuban, remember when he purchased the Mavericks? It was just a different vibe.
Yeah.
Steve Ballmer purchases the Clippers. It's just a different vibe.
Yeah, you're going to see the Jazz. They might be more aggressive now under his ownership. Money now, you know, maybe he'll go out and spend on what he has to do to make the team winner. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing moving forward for the Jazz.
Here's the coolest thing. I was reading about Ryan Smith. I knew nothing about Ryan Smith. I knew nothing about him. So I'm reading everything that I'm sure Jazz fans have been reading. This is a guy that grew up playing junior jazz. He played in the youth program. And he said that during his press conference. He wanted to play for the Utah Jazz. It's a passion. He used to golf with Darren Williams. He plays pickup basketball games at BYU. He attended Game 5 of the NBA Finals when the Warriors won it. He's been at most Jazz games in recent years near the front row. It's neat. I think it's a cool story. And again, not to say anything negative about the Millers, because this was Larry's passion. I don't believe it was Gail's passion. I don't believe it was Larry's kid's passion.
No.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. They just wanted to continue the legacy that their dad built, and that was his baby. And they really, you know, it's hard, you know, to get rid of something that Larry put so much into. I think they kind of felt like they had to hold on to that as long as they could, and then as they're getting older, that passion's kind of going away. So, you know, with, you know, everything going on in the world, you know, this is a way that they can, you know, pass that on to somebody else that's going to take care of it. And for Jazz fans, they don't have to worry about it.
Yay or nay, are you in?
I'm in. I think it's great.
I do too. I do too. And with it, it's not just the Jazz. I mean, we're talking about Vivint. We're talking about the Bees. He's now the manager, whatever that means. I haven't been able to figure out what that means. Does he own the Bees? He's the acting manager of the Bees. I don't know what that is now.
We'll just say owner for now, because
yeah,
we don't know.
He's the owner for the most part, and the Stars as well.
Stars, so. And then a separate agreement he's going to go into with the radio stations that they own.
Yeah, so. 1280 The Zone, right? Yep. He's going to own 1280 The Zone. So all in all, look, if I'm a Jazz fan, I'm happy. I think you need new life. Everything starts from the very, very top. And small market teams tend to complain about larger market teams paying the luxury tax, having some of the highest payrolls in the game. You want an owner with deep pockets, but more importantly, you want a fan that cares about winning. There's nothing more frustrating for a fan than rooting for a team when the owner doesn't even care if they win. You're going through that right now with the New York Jets. I don't believe that your owner cares one iota if that team wins or loses, and it's a frustrating ordeal. It's frustrating when you're a fan. Let's move on from the Utah Jazz, because I want to touch on this topic as well. Tony La Russa, new manager of the Chicago White Sox. I touched on this briefly at the beginning of the show. Are you in or are you out?
I'm out.
Tell me why. Because I don't hate it, but I don't love it. So tell me why.
He's what, 79 years old?
76.
I just don't think that he can relate to the players nowadays. And they totally botched this from the start with the press release where they had A.J. Hinch's signature on the email. That tries to tell me AJ Hinch was probably their guy, and from that point, yeah. What happened from there? I don't like recycling these old managers that he's been away for so long from the game. I just don't think it's going to work out. I think that's like a 2-year deal, maybe even one. I don't think that's smart for a team that's set up to win now.
I think the only issue I have with it is, Could it be too mentally hard on Tony La Russa? Yeah, and that's just think about it mentally, okay? But Travis, the other thing I got to point out to people is that while he's been away 10 years in the dugout, he's been around baseball.
He's been in the front offices,
He's been in the front office of multiple teams. But we're so stuck in this analytical game. Tony La Russa was one of the first managers to implement analytics. So he understands that aspect of it. I don't know how the players will relate to La Russa, because this guy is anti-players movement for social justice. He doesn't want to hear any of that. He's come out and said it. Maybe it's a breath of fresh air. Maybe they need it. In my mind, this is Jerry Reinsdorf going back to correct something that he did 30 years ago.
That's his buddy. So
I'm okay with it. I don't know that it's going to work.
I don't think it's going to work, and I'm not all right with it. I just think that for that team, that team has so many good young players that they're in a position where if they get the right guy, they could do some damage. And now I just don't think that's going to work out, having that guy there with everything that he's against. He's not very player friendly. I don't think they're going to react to that.
Maybe that's what Reinsdorf thinks they need. I don't know. I'm not willing to say a guy cannot do a job because of his age. That's wrong. I don't know if he can handle it mentally over the course of a 162-game season. He believes he can. But look, we can revert this back to the NFL. People said it wasn't right that the Rams hired Sean McVay because of his age, because of his youth. I just don't think it's right to say that. I don't hate it. I don't like it. I don't know about it.
And for the Tigers, hiring A.J. Hinch, I don't know if that makes sense.
Nah, it's a home run. Regardless of what you think.
No, I love him as a manager, but for that Tigers team that's not set up to win, their years.
Well, it's a long-term commitment to A.J. Hinch.
We'll see.
You know, I think the Tigers won the offseason because as far as looking for a manager, how often does a World Series champion manager just fall into your lap?
Not very often. And the Red Sox are going to hire a quarterback, which is great.
So that's where we're sitting as far as new owners, new managers. It's Major League Baseball and the NBA. We're out of time of this week of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again on Monday. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.